What I like about real estate is that you're providing a really tangible good for people. Mm-hmm. And that really drives me. It's not just returns. It's not just, you know, solving cool problems is probably the second one. I just like solving interesting problems. You know, I really like providing a tangible good for people with what I'm doing.
Welcome to Passive Income Unlocked, where we unlock the doors to intelligent, hands-off real estate investing. We talk to experts in the space about what they do, how they do it, and most importantly, why they do it. My passion is careful, intelligent investing and closing the investing gap one investor at a time. While money doesn't buy happiness, passive income does have the potential to buy back your time. What would you choose to do with your time if you had enough passive income to live your best life? How would you like to spend your days? What kind of impact would you like to make? I'm here to tell you, dream big. There's no ceiling. It's all possible if you take consistent action towards your goals. It's been said that success is 80% mindset and 20% strategy. So we discuss both. Ready to gain knowledge and take action? Let's dive in. Hey, everyone, and welcome back to the show. Today, I'm very excited to introduce our guest for the day, Mason Moreland. Mason, thanks so much for coming back on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Suja. Happy to be here and excited to chat again. It's been a little while.
Yes, it has. And I'm excited to hear what's going on with you and also do a deep dive into your vineyard project. So everyone, Mason is a real estate investor and vineyard developer slash operator. He is responsible for the growth, finance, and process improvement at Texas Vine Country. And Mason is also an environmental consultant for his day job. And we're really excited to hear about how he's using vineyard mechanization and automation technology and setting himself apart in the wine industry. So excited to hear a lot more about that. Mason, why don't you just give us, you know, remind the listeners who haven't heard your first show a little bit how you got into this space.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, my background, as you can tell by the string of different random things that I'm involved in, is a little bit winding. Started out as a thinking I was going to be, you know, the next Steve Irwin or something like that, and studied herpetology. So reptiles, snakes, amphibians, all the things nobody else likes, and realized I didn't want to chase research grant dollars for the rest of my life. And I went down the consulting path and have done that ever since. Still work in environmental consulting from a W-2 with SWCA Environmental Consultants. And I've been investing in real estate, traditional real estate, not vineyards, nothing crazy, literally just single family homes, long-term rentals and short-term rentals since about 2012 or 2013 with my dad and my brother. And, you know, we were basically doing the rich dad, poor dad thing, acquire homes, use debt to efficiently create wealth. And at a certain point, we realized it wasn't very scalable, right? We had, you know, almost $3 million worth of homes under management and several different cities, three different cities. It's like, okay, this is a little crazy. If we try to go any bigger, we have to go multifamily or, you know, something similar to that, commercial real estate of some kind, something that's a little more scalable. Started looking into that, swung and missed on our first one, physical due diligence and phase, and decided, hey, you know, to get up to our standards, we're going to have to dose this place. This is not a deal for us. We'll walk away from the money and find something better to do that jives with our morals for making money. Our motto is live well. You know, we can't do that very well on a property like that ethically. So this is about the time I moved back to Texas. I'd moved up to Colorado for a while. That's the other thing I did. I worked in oil and gas for a number of years. So internally with Anadarko Petroleum, my wife did as well. And we moved back down to Texas and I started feeling a real pull to find something else that was highly constructive. That's what I like about real estate is that you're providing a really tangible good for people. Mm-hmm. And that really drives me. It's not just returns. It's not just, you know, solving cool problems is probably the second one. I just like solving interesting problems. You know, I really like providing a tangible good for people with what I'm doing. And I was drawn back to agriculture just from my biology background. You know, I have family that ranches. You know, we live in an area that's very ag-based. If you're not in oil and gas, you're probably agricultural adjacent or related. And I was looking at row crop agriculture and it's just not that lucrative. You know, it's a very safe bet. It's kind of like gold, right? You're buying something that's hedging loss. You're not really buying.
What did you call it? Row crop?
Row crop. Yeah. So that's like your traditional, you plant it in the spring, it grows and you harvest it in the fall. So corn, cotton, peanuts, I guess wheat, you would actually winter wheat, you plant in the winter and harvest in the spring. but you know, your traditional annuals. So they grow, you harvest them and they die. Mm-hmm. And I was looking at that and you know, you can make a decent return, 5 or 6% or so cash on cash on buying and basically renting this out to farmers, but not that lucrative, not enough to make me really, you know, jump up and go, hey, I'm quitting single family and multifamily and commercial real estate. I'm getting out. Wasn't enough to do that. But around that time, I realized I had a friend who was working for our now director of vineyard management, Rusty, and started asking him all about vineyards because I had watched a movie, literally. I mean, the most silly, romantic version of getting into it, right? I was like, oh, that'd be so cool to have a vineyard on our property and like maybe it'll offset our house, right? I think it was a good year.
What movie was that?
I think it's Russell Crowe. It's not that good, but it was a decent movie. It was okay.
Okay.
But just the idea, you know, of living on an estate and still being able to produce that like tangible item that's like people are going to celebrate their birthdays, weddings, you know, reunions with loved ones, like that, providing that to people, that just jazzes me up, right? I get all excited about that kind of stuff. That's a cool thing to be able to do for people. And I started underwriting it and the operational costs are just insane. Basically what I told him was like, I'm not going to do a 15 acre vineyard. I'm going to be all my time's going to get sucked up. I'm going to be paying thousands of dollars an acre just to keep this thing up. Mm-hmm. And on a good year, I can make a lot of money, but on a bad year, you know, if I'm not out there buying real industrial commercial grade crop insurance, I'm not, this isn't for me. So I kind of tabled it for a while and started talking with Rusty more. And he had been going out to the West Coast and going out to these large vineyards where, you know, they're making money selling grapes at $500 a ton, $400 a ton. For context, the average price in Texas is $1,900 a ton. So significant price difference. And they're still making money. So, you know, some of the biggest companies in the world, Gallo, Constellation, the Wine Group, and they've got, you know, a small ranch for them is 1,000 acres. Mm-hmm. The largest vineyard in the state of Texas is 1,000 acres. The largest single vineyard. So big scale difference. And what they were doing is they were doing this at a large scale. B, they were reducing their operational costs by removing people from the vineyard and mechanizing all the processes that you have to do throughout the year. And C, they were pushing yields up. So the actual tons of grapes that you're producing per acre was double what we're doing in Texas and what other areas of California were doing, even within the same area. And they were maintaining quality. Mm-hmm. They're still able to produce the same or very, very similar quality. You know, they're matching in taste tests. So we're like, why can't we do this here? You know, we've got a very similar climate. We've got some issues that are a little different in California. We have some cold weather, as you might recall from February this year. We had the mega freeze that plunged the whole state into darkness for a while there. But yeah, that was the light bulb moment of like, hey, I'm looking at $350 a ton for break-even price versus current in Texas, like 1,000, that's a huge competitive advantage. If we can merge our experience in real estate and business to bring the finance background, the operational experience that we have with the expertise in grapes and with the expertise in traditional farming, we can make something like this happen here in Texas.
Yeah, for sure. That's exciting. And I know you're the operations expert in this shop and want to hear more about that. But first, how do you see managing the risk of just because like one of the things that we like about multifamily is the relative predictability of it. You know, like you kind of obviously no one has a total crystal ball, but we know that like rents are going to increase or we can project like conservatively. It seems like with the price of grapes, there could be significant fluctuation. How do you work that into, you know, your projections and way you're thinking about it?
It's definitely still a commodity. You know, it's kind of like the folks in oil and gas to relate back to that life.
Yeah.
You know, you live and die by the price of oil. You know, in Texas specifically, the price has been very stable. And that's mostly because, like I said, almost everybody in the state, I may have said this before we started, but in the state of Texas, most folks are focused on producing, as far as growers of grapes, are focused on producing premium and ultra premium grapes. So for that well over $30 bottle of wine, $30 is going to be like your entry tier for Texas wines. So the price of grapes is actually very, very stable. So for the last over 10 years, it's hovered right around $1,900 a ton average when you adjust for CPI inflation. That's a major portion. If you take that factor into account, the commodity prices have been incredibly stable here in Texas. So we may disrupt that and we plan on being able to account to that, but it's more of niching down. But on the risk front, you know, one of the biggest things that folks talk about is weather, you know, because it's your returns are sitting out there in a field, right? They're all exposed. So something I would ask you in return is, what kind of insurance would you typically buy for a multifamily property?
Mm-hmm. Well, you want to get insurance coverage that, you know, covers you for extreme weather events and for various other types of, property damage, business income damage, et cetera. So yeah, the cost of insurance is also going up for multifamily properties.
For sure. Have you ever been able to find a policy to insure against vacancy?
I haven't.
That's one of the beautiful things about agriculture. So we can actually insure against our revenues. So the way insurance works, obviously we can get extreme weather event insurance and things like that. So yeah, if a tornado rips through the vineyard, okay, yeah, we're going to have a deductible, but we can go out there, fix the trellising, replace the vines. But one of our largest costs year to year operationally is actually crop insurance. And that's because we're able to lock in 70 to 75% of our revenues every year by paying that. So if we do get one of those events, like an early freeze or a late freeze that affects the following year, or hail, we had hail this year about 3 or 4 times come through, knock off 1 or 2 percentage points of yield every time, we're able to actually lock in a floor for our revenue at 70 to 75%, depending on where you end up purchasing it, which is just something you can't do in traditional commercial real estate. I can't go buy an insurance policy that says, if my tenant decides not to renew and it takes me a year to lease up, I still get 70% of my income for that whole time.
Yeah. And is that like something that's government subsidized, or how are the insurance companies able to offer that kind of crop insurance?
So it's pretty complex on the crop insurance side, and it depends on the commodity. Mm-hmm. So the calculations are definitely based on government numbers. So like the USDA sets T yields, which affect our total amount of insurance that we can buy before we have production. So it's based on, and I could literally do a whole show on this if I knew more about how the calculations work. I'm good enough with them to underwrite them. I'm not good enough with them to be an insurance agent. But
sure.
Essentially, the way it works is it takes your trailing 3 years of yield per acre on each variety, and it takes the trailing three, or the current contract price on your grapes. Now, if you don't have 3 years of data, they sub in those USDA numbers. So the USDA contract price, the USDA T yield number for your area.
Okay.
So they fill in the gaps with those numbers.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. I guess it is very interesting, right? That you can get crop insurance that provides such like a wide level of coverage. And so since the price of grapes is higher in Texas than it is in California, then are they insuring you for the price of grapes in Texas or California?
This show is sponsored by Lux Capital Investment Group. Lux Capital provides pre-vetted, highly favorable investment opportunities on a risk-adjusted basis. Our opportunities are diversified across asset classes, geographies, and operators. We are nothing short of rigorous in our approach to evaluating investments. We focus on downside protection, conservative underwriting, recession-resistant asset classes, and forging strong relationships with operating partners and investors. If you want to be an intelligent, hands-off investor and gain access to the types of deals that I like to invest in personally, make sure to go to lux-cap.com, lux-cap.com, and sign up for our newsletter.
They are for the price of grapes in Texas. So it's based on your area.
Okay. Yeah.
So that is good. So, your USDA contract price, I don't know what it is exactly right now. Last time I looked, it was something like around that average price per ton number of 1900. It may have been as low as 1600 at the time. So those first years, and that's actually an interesting point that I talk with a lot of people about when we're going through our a typical deal model, is they're like, why do the returns keep changing even though your yield, your vineyard matures in year 5, but our returns keep changing out to year 9? It's because of that lag. So as you start accumulating that previous data, until you get to 3 consistent years of here's what our production is, your insurance costs keep going up because you're saying, okay, I'm using 3 years of T yield, now 2 years, now 1 year plus 2 years of actual production. But those first 2 years aren't as good as the final years. So until you have 3 years of full production, you don't have that full coverage, full price. So it's a little complex, but it takes about 9 years, 10 years to model out exactly where your stabilized costs are.
Okay. Yeah. Very cool. Okay. Well, that's really awesome and fascinating and definitely makes that particular niche very intriguing from a risk perspective, right? It really lowers the amount of risk you're having because, I mean, even if you're able to recover 75% of, is that still a profitable year in that case?
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, with the margin that we have on the grapes, with our operational cost being so low, you know, we're still projecting returns that are beating some of your best multifamily deals if we're on a total out where we're taking insurance. Mm-hmm. One of the sort of running jokes out here, at least in the Lubbock area, is you see a farmer pull up in like his limited edition F-350 diesel pickup with all the bells and whistles, like a $110,000 pickup. Like, oh, wow. Insurance farming must have been good this year. You know, it's a sort of a running joke, even on some of the bad years. You know, you see some of these farmers that do pretty well despite not having a good crop. But yeah, it's a little different than cotton farming and annual farming, like we talked about. But
yeah, for sure, interesting. Okay, great. Now I want to touch on a little bit more about how you guys are being so efficient with your costs and operational costs and mechanization. And can you just tell me a bit about how that works?
Sure. So I guess the first thing to talk about is what can you mechanize in a vineyard? You know, probably a lot of your listeners are more familiar with property automation, things like locks that you can remotely change codes to or key or rekey easily, you know, increased efficiency on water, so toilets and things like that. In vineyards, you've got a series of tasks that you have to do throughout the year. It all runs in a life cycle. If you start your vineyard year in January, the vines are dormant. They have growth from the last year all on them. So they're very weedy looking, but they're no leaves, just twigs, basically. What you've got to do first in the year is prune the vines. So every single year, they have to be pruned. And that is one of the most labor-intensive tasks you can do in a vineyard. In a traditionally trellis system, so vertical shoot positioning, you've got, let's see, 2, 4, 6, 7, seven or more wires, 8 if you include the irrigation wire, if you have above ground irrigation, in your way. So if you're thinking about trying to mechanize that, I've got 8 pairs of, you know, 8 different wires in my way that I've got to account for when I'm running through there with a tractor with a bunch of spinning blades on it. You know, it's kind of a logistical nightmare trying to figure out how is this going to work? So, you know, most folks can do some pre-pruning, which is basically you come through and it just hedges off, you know, a rough cut. So it's easier for folks to come in with hand shears and actually prune the individual vine. Well, in our system, we've got one wire. So it's just posts. You can actually see it behind me. It's just posts with a single wire going across the top, about head high. And what it does is it makes a tube of vine, essentially, if you're looking down the vine row. And we kind of let it go wild. So this whole system banks on being able to let the vine do very natural vine things. So in that beginning of the year, when we have to prune, instead of having to go through and do a pre-prune with a tractor and then come back and hand prune, we can actually hop in the tractor, set using the computer on the tractor, the exact length that we want to leave on the spurs coming off the vine. So how short do we want to trim it? How long do we want to trim it based on, you know, our consultant, what we're seeing in the field, things like that. And hop in the tractor and babysit. And that thing just goes down and uses optical sensors to actually follow. And it's got a box of spinning blades. It jumps each post, just comes out every time it sees a post, and it will follow that wire, even if as it goes up and down, to make sure that we're getting the exact length of cut that we need. Now, the downside to that is you're leaving, this is really in the weeds kind of, but all these spurs. So you see like a freshly pruned cordon pruned or spur pruned vine. It's got all these little twigs sticking off all those arms coming down the sides. In a traditionally like hand pruned vineyard, you would actually be taking off any extras. So you're getting exactly the yield you want. That's great for doing precision, you know, like premium production, because you're trying to get that vine to concentrate on just a few things and get those grapes really, really awesome. Mm-hmm. Well, we leave basically all the spurs on there. So it could produce, you know, as opposed to what the Texas average is, yield 3 to 5 tons an acre, we could push 25 tons per acre. So significantly more and potentially more than we can actually ripen, right? So the vine can put out more than it can make taste good. And what we have to do is similar to the VSP, they still have to do all these functions too, but we're able to come back and do all the following tasks mechanized instead of by hand. So normally you'd have to go through by hand and actually pull any extra shoots off. Well, we have machines that do that. I have like a rotating drum with a bunch of rubber fingers on them. And you sit in the tractor and you adjust the speed at which it rotates to actually knock off to get exact number of shoots per foot. that you need to get your target yield, because your winemakers are coming to you and they're saying, wow, like, hey, I want this grape at this much sugar with this kind of qualities. I think that I would like it to be somewhere in the range of like 5 to 12 tons per acre, you know, or maybe even, you know, more precise, like I want it at 13 or 14. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, that's really specific. So we're able to anticipate that and say, okay, mm-hmm, we need this many clusters of grapes at bloom and go knock off any extra up ahead. Whereas in a traditional vineyard, you've got all those wires. There's a lot going on. You're limiting your mm-hmm canopy. So in a VSP, wow, like I said, it's got pairs of wires. So it's, you're making like this hedge, like a wall of canopy. But what we do, we just have the one wire. So there's nothing to catch those shoots coming out. They grow mm-hmm this great big umbrella-like canopy. You're able to ripen a whole lot of fruit, but it comes with some other issues you have to deal with. The VSP, the wall was great for back in the day in Europe, when they're trying to cram as many rows as they can and still get some sunlight down in there. But for modern operations where we're running a tractor anyways, we can't even squeeze the rows that close together because we can't fit a tractor through there. So it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But we're able to prune, we're able to remove shoots mechanically, we're able to thin additional clusters mechanically, we're able to remove leaves to get more sunlight into the fruit. Mechanically, we're able to spray. Obviously, everybody can pretty much spray mechanically with sprayer tractors. We harvest mechanically, which is super cool. It has like this, it basically comes through and shakes the vines and then sucks them up as they fall down. And the machine we have actually sorts them, destems them. So they come out as just loose grapes. So you could essentially drive the tractor up to a wine press and dump it right into it. And it's clean enough to just press, which is really neat. But you can see like it, with all those processes just to lead up to harvest, you know, for a vineyard of our size, we're talking like 60 people seasonally out there to run it in a traditional manner. And we run 300 acres with three people.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So it's a huge operational cost difference. But it's, you know, if you're going to buy these tractors are $500,000 each, you know, just without your equipment that goes on the tractor.
Yeah.
So your upfront cost is really, really high. And it doesn't make sense to do that unless you can keep that tractor busy all the time. So you have to scale up to a certain size.
Mm-hmm. Very fascinating. Wow. I mean, I'm just so curious as to how you learned all of this, Mason. Did you go to some program? Do you have mentors? How'd you learn how to do this fancy wine growing, grape growing?
A little bit of all of that. So yeah, you know, it's a long road to get that far. And it started a number of years ago for me. And it really kicked off. I remember distinctly when it was that I actually got interested in grapes and started learning specifically about them. I was doing field work for environmental consulting on that high-speed rail that they've been trying to build between Dallas and Houston. And the other guys were making fun of me. One of the guys always called me Cletus. He's like, Cletus, what the heck are you doing over there? You screwing around? I was like, over there, like messing with some wild grapes. I was like, no, man, I was just seeing what species this was. It's just fascinating to me that, you know, grapes are growing in Texas and there's just not that many vineyards. And, you know, Texas actually has this long story history. Yeah. You know, granted, the parasites that came from the U.S. almost ruined the European wine industry or the insects and disease, but Texas actually saved it too. Our native grape rootstock is actually what you find all out in California. Every single grape out there, pretty much with the exception of a few, are all grafted on the native grapes that can be found and originated from Texas for the most part. And T.V. Munson from Texas, the guy that pioneered all this rootstock grafting.
Interesting.
But yeah, it started learning kind of like I do everything. I read a bunch of nerdy scientific articles from scholarly journals, and then I go on to the nerdy books. And then I moved on to the experts in the field like Rusty that have a little more on the ground experience, right? Because you can read all you want about vineyards in California and learn how vines work and how vineyards work and how wine's made. But until you get on the ground where you're wanting to do something with somebody that's had experience doing it for a number of years, you're going to miss something. You're not going to know everything. I still don't know everything. I'm not a grape expert. I'll never claim to be a grape expert because there's too much to learn.
I would call you a grape expert. But yeah, no, I mean, it's good to know what you don't know.
I'll never claim to be a wine expert either, for sure. But, you know, it's one of those deals. I know my specialty is putting the right people in the right place at the right time and the right equipment in the right place at the right time. And that's really where I bring the most value to the deals and to the wine and grape industry.
Yeah, for sure. Well, that is all very, very fascinating, Mason. Thank you so much for sharing this very interesting information about, you know, a different kind of real estate play. I mean, really, it's more of an agricultural play, but it's still real estate in a sense, because you're, you know, you're adding value, you're improving property and then selling a product. So yeah,
it's sort of like drinking from a fire hose. It's a lot.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. Congratulations on, you know, making moves in this space. And thanks for sharing everything with the listeners. Really appreciate it. Please go ahead and tell the listeners how they can learn more about you and anything else you want to share.
Yeah, sure. And thanks again for having me on. I appreciate chatting with you every time. And it's always fun. So much obliged. I've been looking forward to it. Yeah. If you want to follow what we're doing, find me on LinkedIn, Mason Moreland, spelled like you would expect a real estate guy's last name, Moreland. I'm a LinkedIn junkie. I'll admit I'm addicted. So I'm on there all the time. You can find us on our website. If you're not following me on there, you're probably missing content because that's where I'm at most of the time. But TexasVineCountry.company is on there, and www.texasvinecountry.com. That's our website.
That's awesome.
Has a little bit more kind of explaining about what we do, that kind of thing. But yeah, LinkedIn's probably the biggest one.
Awesome. Well, everyone, please, if you have time, go ahead and check Mason out on LinkedIn and see what he's got to say about growing grapes in Texas. Mason, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been a pleasure as always. We'll see you next time.
Thanks to you.
Thank you so much for listening to Passive Income Unlocked. Before you go on to continue with your amazing day, please take a moment to reflect on what you truly desire in life. Then think about one thing you can do to push the ball forward in that direction. Also, please head over to iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts and leave an honest rating and review of this show. It really would mean so much to me. Passive Income Unlocked is brought to you by Lux Capital. Lux works with investors nationwide to invest in real estate. We are closing the investing gap one investor at a time. Connect online at www.lux-cap.com, LUXE-CAP.com, for tons of free educational content to further your success.